The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast, one of the host's favorite form of prevent defense is Frontline. That's Lenny. Still waiting for that sponsorship. I'm Mina Kimes. I am joined by the one.
I like that one.
The only. Thank you. The host of the Dominique Foxworth Show, Dominique Foxworth.
Hey, yeah, I like that one. That's the flea and tick medicine, right?
It is, yeah. I don't know if I've used it before, but it feels like I haven't. Maybe I have. I don't know if anyone's keeping track. If anyone's keeping track, how dare you?
Yeah. Should be ashamed.
I should probably keep track. Dominique, welcome back. The Super Bowl is set. You're in New York. We're coming off of two very weird championship games. One of which was so weird that I was really struggling to even decide what to talk about with it. That, of course, is the game where the Eagles at one point played Christian McCaffrey at quarterback. I feel like anytime we anticipate an incredible NFL game, you're like, there's like a 50% chance it's going to let you down in some. I didn't anticipate it letting us down in this particular way. Maybe I should have, knowing the Niners' luck with quarterback injuries. But so we're not going to like get into the games per se. I asked you to come up with, so we're going to talk about the teams that are in the Super Bowl. I'm not doing matchups just yet. There'll be plenty of time for that next week. But for the Chiefs and the Eagles, I wanted each of us to kind of come up with basically three reasons why they're in the Super Bowl, why they got here, taking a step back, looking at both their, you know, the championships, the body of work, the season, and maybe there'll be some takeaways for other teams coming out of it. Then in the second half of this podcast, we're going to look ahead for the Bengals and the Niners, both of whom have very interesting off seasons, one of which got a lot more interesting with the news that Brock Purdy, their quarterback, suffered a pretty serious injury. So, Dominique, does that sound good? Are you happy to take the Eagles?
Love it. You want me to start?
Yeah, you can start. It's. I mean, from a team building, larger lesson, roster construction standpoint, I actually think this is also really interesting because the two teams are so different, and the reasons they've succeeded are pretty different. So, yeah, you go first. Give it. Let's start with the Eagles.
Well, I mean, I had one throwaway comment is the NFC sucks. It's one of the reasons why the Eagles are in the Super Bowl, but that you can't really control that from a roster building standpoint. We talked about the kind of open pathway there was in the NFC for much of the season, but not only was that pathway there, but the NFC got worse once the playoffs started with injuries and whatnot. So that's a bit of luck. Yeah, so the NFC sucks. That's part of it. I also think that from a roster construction standpoint, the AJ Brown trade was an enormous decision.
But let's skip ahead. Let's take these one at a time. I think the AJ thing is really interesting. I do want to get into that. But your point about the NFC, I mean, the Eagles could not have had an easier path to get to the Super Bowl in the playoffs, facing a very undermanned Giants team that beat a very overrated Vikings team. And then the Niners game was supposed to be this true battle, and it did face a complete Niners defense, which we'll talk about. So it's not like they weren't tested altogether, but the defense certainly has not been battle tested. And which is interesting because I think coming away from that game, that the Eagles pass rush was so overwhelming, and you certainly can praise them for what they did to the Niners offensive line. But it is hard to draw super significant conclusions, especially facing off against, you know, what was the best offense in the NFL for much of the season and the best quarterback in the league after they faced, again, Christian McCaffrey under center at one point and then a Brock Purdy who couldn't throw the ball. Yeah, so, like, I think that this is, I mean, both one seeds made it too, right? Like, it is the most desirable advantage in the NFL for a reason. Not just because of the bye, but because of the path you should hypothetically take. And the Eagles certainly had an easy-ish path.
Well, that was it wasn't supposed to be one of my answers, but I guess you made it into one of my answers. That was just a throwaway because it's nothing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
The NFC sucking is not something they can control, but you can build up a really talented roster, which they did, despite the fact that no one else in the entire conference seemed to have as complete a roster. Even the 49ers, who some people say is the best roster in football, anyone who's saying that doesn't respect offensive linemen. Is all it comes down to, because I think that's where you find the major difference. And it's fair, we don't know offensive linemen names. We don't like to talk about them a bunch, but as good as the 49ers running game is, and their play action passing attack and their weapons on the outside are, they have one great offensive lineman, and that about it.
I want to put a pin in the NFC-AFC thing, because I actually do think it applies to something specific, someone, when it comes to the Niners offseason and which conference that person might prefer to play in. Okay, so what is your number one? Since that was a throwaway, what is your number one?
The number one is the A.J. Brown thing. And that you could have predicted if you listened to me on this show in particular or any other show, frankly. Patrick Mahomes is making me look dumb, but you could have predicted that I said the importance of a number one receiver, a true number one receiver, they have two of them there, is hugely valuable for what it does for your offense, what it does for your quarterback, all the and there's different types of number ones, and I think that's one of the things that they benefit from having. A.J. Brown is a great, like, quarterback's helper, because he wins the deep balls and he can do yards after catch. Like, a guy like that takes so much pressure off your quarterback, takes so much pressure off the rest of your offense, and frankly could take pressure off your offensive line if you so need it. But the Eagles don't need that.
There were games that they won this season undoubtedly because they traded for AJ Brown. Jalen Hurts, I think, took a huge step as a passer in large part because they traded for AJ Brown. Three of the four teams in the final four had a preponderance of talent at skill player. And then you have the rule breaker, Patrick Mahomes, where it doesn't matter. But we'll get to that. But I think it will go down as one of the most astute moves made in the offseason. It is probably why Howie Roseman will win Executive of the Year. He did a lot of other things that were really smart, but that was certainly one of them. And it's kind of incredible, like in a game like this Niners game, it didn't matter that the Eagles weren't good passing in this game, in part because they're so dominant running the ball and the option game is so hard to stop, but also because if you're facing Christian McCaffrey, a quarterback, or Josh Johnson, or a non-functional Brock Purdy, you don't have to really throw. I do think that's going to become, you know, there'll be more pressure on them to throw the ball against the Kansas City Chiefs. It was fun. There was one moment, though, Dominique, where I was laughing. I'm sure if you listen to this pod, you've heard in other places talked about the Eagles' run game and how much they scared the Niners with the RPO. And it was on the two back-to-back big runs. One was the Gainwell run to the left, and then the other was the Miles Sanders run with Kelsey pulling. On both of those plays, the Eagles had bunch formations to the right where, again, the threat of the RPO clearly influenced the Niners linebackers. Seeing a frozen Fred Warner is just such a crazy, like, visual. It kind of blew my mind. But I bring this up only because I was laughing, because on the first play, the Gainwell one, the bunch was A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. That's insane. Like, you know, it's the option game works really well for a litany of reasons. The run blocking, the run game, Jalen Hurts himself as a threat of a runner. But also having those guys makes it, you just, there's no right answers when it comes to this offense. And it starts with the fact that they have a true number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all that stuff works so well together, and it doesn't feel like this was a original plan, which, like, it never can be. It's always kind of an emergent strategy, but it kind of feels like, let's get a bunch of here and then figure out what they do well and build around them. Because I think that speaks to the Jalen Hurts value, is putting the bunch on one side, having so many talented receivers that you, or playmakers that you can put in different ways, that is like step one. Step two is like being able to run the ball well. And then step three is my quarterback can run it too. So, like, it's really hard to address all of that. And it puts a lot of pressure on your playmakers. But honestly, I think it takes more pressure off the players and puts pressure on the coaches to adapt quickly. Because when you're playing a great team and a smart team, there are answers to everything that the Eagles can present. But how quickly can you adjust? And then this goes back to the players being smart and being adaptive, but how quickly can you adjust? Because they're going to be like, all right, we can stop the bunch, to your point. We can stop the bunch. We're going to put some of our great players over there. All right, well, we'll run it over here. All right, let's adjust to that. All right, maybe we'll go back to the bunch. You know what? We're not going to do that. We'll just run it with our quarterback. Like, it's just, it compounds.
There was that moment where they had Hufanga out to the side. So when, you know, Hertz was killing them with the keeper, with keep earlier. So they were like, okay, Nick Bosa, you play the keep. We'll put Hufanga out here. But then I think it was Miles Sanders who blocked Hufanga. And then Jalen had his big run. I mean, it's just, the Eagles have so many counter punches to your punches, is to your point, that it's a real issue. All right, what's your number two takeaway?
Number two takeaway is drafting Jordan Mailata in the seventh round. Like, it's underappreciated. You know, like, we talk about how good this offensive line is, and we talk about Kelsey. We talk about Lane Johnson apparently not needing a groin, but we don't give as much credit to the left tackle, which is traditionally the more difficult position, Jordan Mailata. And I think that not only does he deserve credit for being good or great, he was a seventh-round draft pick, a 6'8 rugby player. Like, that...
He just learned how to play football.
Yeah, like, he's been a singer longer than he's been a football player. And he might be just as good at that. So, like, I think that is an incredible decision that worked out because some luck and hard work and all that stuff. But, like, having two tackles, having a generally a great offensive line, but two tackles on both sides, that neither of which do you have to, like, help. Like, it's nice to help them sometimes.
Yeah.
But they're both athletic enough to be a part of the running game in a way that you don't always use tackles. Like, seeing how they use Kelsey because of his athleticism, man's running around the edge. Like, yeah, his brother's a tight end. And you see that they have similar genes. Even though they don't look alike and they don't act very similarly, they don't dress the same.
They act pretty similar.
No, they both act weird. They don't act weird in the same way.
They're both confident.
Yeah, they're both extremely confident. But, like, his athleticism, so I guess it's an offensive line in general, but I picked up Mailata because I feel like he doesn't get enough credit, and the seventh round pick of it, like, is huge.
I guess, you know, Jeff Stoutland is the offensive line maestro and run game coordinator, and whatever they're paying that dude, it's not enough, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who else is out there. Like, if I was a team, I'd be trying to poach him. Like, I'd throw a zillion dollars at, I mean, I'm sure he's on a contract or whatever, but my point is, like, if you can find a guy like that who can coach up offensive linemen, because it is funny, right? The Eagles, I think it was Howie Roseman who coined the term quarterback factory, and when they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round, which people didn't love because they had Carson Wentz and all that, and, you know, we can certainly history looks kindly upon that decision, but the reality is they're an O-line factory. It is a position that they've committed resources, time, attention to, and it is the number one reason why they are so successful. All right, number three.
Number three. Let me go back to my list. What do I have here? Okay. Drawing my line here. Oh, yeah, the Jalen Hurts leap, which I guess we've already talked about some of the things around them that made him take the leap, and I think a lot of his quarterback numbers, I don't want to say inflated, but some of them, like we mentioned A.J. Brown, some of those were like, throw it up over there near A.J. He's going to go get it. But I think by and large, he's been super effective. And I mean, I feel like I'm underselling how good he's been this year by saying he's been effective. But I don't want to lean on the conversations about his running ability or his, like, physical traits, because I think the most impressive thing about his leap is, like, how quickly he makes decisions and how good he's gotten at that, because that's what we're talking about, all these adjustments being made. Part of the challenging thing about this offense is that Jalen Hurts seems to see the game much better than most players his age and much better than he did last year. And then he's gotten more accurate, which we thought never could happen, but it's happened for him. It's happened for Josh Allen. It's happened twice in the last few years. Maybe it's a thing. Someone needs to do some reporting and tell us how that works.
I think it's noteworthy that it's happened with two quarterbacks with incredible physical skill sets, where those physical tools bought them the time to develop the other parts of their game. And Hurts, you know, it is, I think, telling in a game where he didn't have his best day throwing the ball. It didn't matter against a very, very good defense because of the influence that he has as a runner on that defense. And then, of course, that the fact that that's integrated into a, you know, a tremendous rushing attack with tremendous offensive line. But none of it would be as effective if defenses didn't have to respect not just the threat of his legs, but his decision making as an option quarterback. And again, you know, also with the RPOs, he's become very, very, very good at running that system, frankly. And then when you throw in the improved accuracy throwing the ball downfield, again, it was off this Sunday, but for most of the season, it was very, very good. And it presents just, again, like an impossible set of circumstances for defenses to play, when he, especially when he is throwing the ball well. Then it's just like, good night. Yeah, it's, as far as like lessons for other teams, you know, I do think that there's something, there's a lot there in terms of patience, athleticism, valuing athleticism, believing you can teach other things. But, you know, the other thing about Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, you always hear is that both have like this unbelievable work ethic and commitment to making themselves better.
I always wonder when I hear, I mean, I believe it to be true for both of them, but I always wonder when I hear that, because we never hear that about guys who stink. But I'm sure lots of guys
stink. He worked really hard, but he's still
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's never, we also, I mean, some guys bust and we're like, yeah, that guy didn't work that hard or whatever. But I'm sure there are lots of guys who work really hard and it doesn't quite work out for them. There's something else going on. I think the hard work is certainly a part of it, but you can want it. Will Bond said to me a few years ago, if hard work determined how far you were, I would be Ernie Banks, because like he really wanted to be a great baseball player, but just didn't have the talent.
You got to have both, it turns out.
Yeah. Hot take.
Yeah. All right. So I got the Chiefs. Why they're here
D-line
this,
depth too.
This season.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just.
All right. I'm done.
Waves of guys. Hargrave was why we like Reddick kind of was the story coming out of that game, but watching Hargrave, I was reminded of how dominant he's been this season too, kind of flying under the radar a little bit. Okay, Chiefs number one is, I believe, Patrick Mahomes took yet another leap as a quarterback. I talked about this a little bit on NFL Live. This was something that I thought was really highlighted in the championship game, but you definitely saw over the course of the season, which is, this is the year that Patrick Mahomes became unbelievably patient. You know, it feels like so far removed that it feels like another lifetime. But you remember last year, he was throwing interceptions. He was pushing the ball downfield. We said the words too high 5,000 times on ESPN. Didn't matter this year, man. Average depth of target, way down. Mahomes willing to distribute to anyone, taking what the defense gave him. And I thought this was incredibly important in the Bengals game, because the second they started losing all those skill players and the Bengals, it became a lot easier for the Bengals to double Travis Kelce. They were playing a lot of cover one, you know, where the safety was helping on Kelce in the middle of the field. Mahomes said, all right, I'm not going to force the ball to Travis Kelce. I am a different version of Patrick Mahomes. And I think it's why they won that game. The checkdowns he took versus the blitz, his willingness to extend but not enforce it's just really, really, it's like, oh, okay, you're only 27. Like, you there are still levels. You're the greatest quarterback I've ever seen play the position, and you're still getting better, and that's scary.
Listening to you explain that just kind of brought to mind how important it was for him to add that to his game, or to modify his game throughout the course of this season and offseason. Because had he had a full strength ankle, I'm not sure that's how he would approach this game. And I'm not sure that the way that he would have approached this game with a full ankle would have been the best way. So, like, I'm not going to go full Tony Romo and say that it's going to make him a better quarterback, which Tony said a ton of times. Like, oh, okay, I'm not going to go that place. But I think that there's something to be said for him assuming that he can make magic all the time. He does make magic more than most people. But I liked that he was like, all right, I can't. I'm going to step up in the pocket and I'm going to make this decision. I think it's better for that team. It's more dangerous for this team if he does that. Because part of what happens when you break down the play is you then are like more reliant on your on the athleticism of the playmakers. Because it's like now you're playing sandlot, backyard ball. They don't got many athletic guys when they all get hurt. So, like, it might have worked if Tony stayed healthy. Juju's not, like, a super explosive athlete. Travis Kelce is hobbled, but, like, he had to kind of pick him apart. And then when it came down to it, he had one run left, and that was enough.
It's always going to be just enough for him. I mean, that's, like, the true mark of a superstar is, like, you feel like if he just has, you know, that one little run in his tank, that one crazy play, you're going to get it, you know? And I mean, that was the longest run of the game. He had no run game supporting him. Forget the loss of the skill players. They couldn't run the ball for and he in that moment, it was like, all right, I need 4 yards. You're going to get five. I'm going to run the fastest that I've run this entire game. And then that's it, you know? And it's just truly adding to his legend. But I do think that his maturation this season has been pretty remarkable. And yeah. Anyways, okay, number two. This one, I'm curious your thoughts on. I think the Chiefs' defensive improvement over the last couple of months is for real. So weeks 1 through 11, the Chiefs' defense was 25th in EPA per play. Weeks 12 through now, 4th. They got better at pressuring without blitzing, stopping the run. Still not the best run defense, but you saw a lot of improvement from young players. You know, Trent McDuffie gets back in the lineup. George Karlaftis is doing more. All those rookie DBs. And I thought in this game, the championship game, it was validated. Because, dude, when L'Jarius Sneed went out of that game against
early,
who's their best quarterback, against those wide receivers, I was nervous.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not going to go well. And look, they gave up some plays, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you double Jamar Chase and he's Jamar Chase. Sometimes T. Higgins mosses you because he's T. Higgins. But for the most part, I thought, like, this Chiefs defense in coverage, we knew the pass rush had an opportunity to win against that Bengals offensive line. I thought in coverage, they played pretty damn well.
Sometimes you don't guard Hunter Henry because Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are out there. Like, it happens. I understand.
Same HH. Oh.
Yeah,
it's really unfair that they have the same initials and two white.
I've never made that mistake before, but I think Bomani incepted me because he said that he mixes them up on his podcast. And now
isn't Hunter Henry the infamous Stephen A?
Oh yeah, what he did! That was classic. Love Stephen
what
A.
What a moment! All right.
So what was I going to say?
Sometimes the other guys are going to get open.
Yeah, the DBs, I was scared. When that happened, I was like, oh, this is going to be a blowout. This is not going to be a fun game. Patrick's not going to be able to go score for score on a bad ankle. And Darius Sneed went down. I would say that this is an important thing, I think, is when we're talking about should you pay your quarterback or not pay your quarterback, there's no question about it with Patrick Mahomes. But if you are trying to extend your window, this is when your front office needs to earn their money. So, like, we all say the way that you win a Super Bowl is with a quarterback on a rookie deal. Yeah, I think so. But I think the way you – I mean, that's the most obvious way. But I think to make it a more sharp point, the way you win your Super Bowl is value at positions. So once you get to the point where your quarterback is no longer a value, and you're going to have to actually pay him what market rate is for a quarterback, you got to hit elsewhere. And the Chiefs seem to have made their decision. They're going to invest in offensive line. They're going to invest in Patrick Mahomes. Good calls. They're going to have to hit value elsewhere. And when you do that, it's like the Karlaftis and McDuffie come to mind. It's like they weren't great early in the year. And that's fine because the Chiefs aren't playing for early in the year. And that's how they approached it. And they hit, these are players who were productive in the most important moment. And that's the front office lesson is, don't try to bully your quarterback. Don't make him feel guilty for wanting his money. Just do your damn job. Yeah. Like, you have to hit a couple more times in the draft. Like, it's just the way it's going to have to be. And even if your quarterback's as good as Patrick Mahomes, if those guys weren't there, they would not win. It's plain and simple. If they failed, they wouldn't win. Without, and no one's going to be writing think pieces about how George Karloftis and Trent McDuffie, well, I guess it wouldn't be a think piece, but like analysis pieces about how those were the pivotal draft picks that made this possible. But like, it's kind of true.
I think it's going to take a while to truly evaluate the Tyreek Hill trade, but you know, it does appear that this front office did make some good choices when it came to the players that they got, the players that they have developed. I mean, shoot, you have like Brian Cook tipping the ball to Josh Williams, who got absolutely destroyed the last time these teams played. These are young, developing players stepping up in big moments. I thought Steve Spagnuolo did a great job of supporting them. He has not always done a great job against this offense in the past. They were mostly just playing cover two in quarters. He was asking those safeties, the safeties were phenomenal in this game, by the way, to help them out. Didn't leave them on an island. You know, there was always two guys on Jamar Chase. And they were obviously helped by the pass rush, but they played well, man. They played well. And one more thing that this defense did, they tackled.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up. So in 2021, week 17, when they played the Bengals, they allowed 8.9 yards after the catch per reception, which is a ton. The next game, the championship, 6.8. The next game, week 13 this year, 5.9. In this game, the 2022 AFC Championship, they allowed only 4.5 yards after catch per reception. That's arguably why they won this game, man. Like, because you knew once that pass rush was going crazy, Joe Burrow was going to get the ball out super quickly, and they just had to tackle them. And there were so many moments where I thought, this is it. This is the one Jamar Chase breaks off, and it just didn't happen. Sometimes football is really complicated. We can talk about all the crazy things these coaches do. Sometimes the players just got to make their tackles, and in this game, the Chiefs did.
Yeah, no matter how complicated you make it or how smart, how sophisticated your scheme is, it doesn't matter if you can't block and you can't tackle. That's what football always ends up coming down to. Those, I guess it's not even what it comes down to. Those are the foundational blocks that, like, we can't even talk about football if you guys can't do that. If you can't do that part.
But there's been so many moments, where the Chiefs defense hasn't
mentioned
been
that. I wanted a new stat. It might have been on Debatable, but I know I was talking to you, that I wanted a stat for EPA avoided. Like, when you break up a pass, like, what would the EPA have been had they caught this pass? I would like to add this to it. EPA after broken tackle. Mm. Because I would like to know what is gained. So that previous game they had, like, you would see an EPA for a specific play. But we need to cut it off at where the first opportunity to have a tackle was. And then let us know what was the EPA after that missed tackle. To, like, determine, because I think yards after contact is kind of like average rushing yards. Like, it gives you an idea for the game, but it could be like,
it's not accounting for situation.
Somebody had a 50-yard run off of one contact.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because maybe they're tackling well all day, and it just, you know, one guy broke off a big run. But you watching this game, very like apparent, especially in contrast to some of those past matchups where it was just like, oh my God, just bring just one guy, please bring him down. I imagine it must have been just annoying for Chiefs fans. Okay, my final takeaway, this is a quick one. The Chiefs also have one player on offense and one player on defense who are the best at their positions in the world, and that's Travis Kelce, best tight end in the world, and Chris Jones. And both of those guys have the ability to completely take over games, and
I like that. I like that as advice to young general managers. Just get the best dude in the world at position. Good idea. Get three guys on your team that are better than everyone else at what they do. Patrick, Chris, and Travis.
You know, but then when we look at these teams and the roster construction, it is, you know, like, it is top heavy. You know, you have like these really, really, really talented superstars, and then you got to find competence generally everywhere else. So, all right, let's take a quick break, come back and talk about the Niners and the Bengals. With Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, every bet earns with Caesars Rewards. That means whether you win or lose, you're always earning towards perks like free stays at iconic Caesars properties, game tickets, dining, and more. And if you haven't started yet, here's a reminder. Your first bet is on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet.
Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. No win to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW YORK or text HOPE-NEW YORK, 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Okay, let's start with the Bengals because this is a little bit more straightforward than the Niners, who are going to have an absolutely insane offseason. I want to start by asking you a question that it's not very nice. Okay, let me put some context first.
Okay.
The Bengals are probably going to pay Joe Burrow, who's entering, you know, the fourth year of his deal.
Probably not.
I mean, well, I know, but they like to get deals done early. This feels like, you know, they're not going to drag it out. He's going to make an F ton of money. So yeah. That advantage goes away. So Ja'Marr Chase has still got some time. T. Higgins has 1 year left on his deal. And then here's this year's unrestricted free agents: Von Bell and Jesse Bates, both of them, Hayden Hurst, Eli Apple, Jermaine Pratt, Samaje Perine, quietly very important for them, Trey Flowers, Drew Sample. And then beyond that, though, there's a few guys with 1 year left: DJ Reader, Tyler Boyd, Logan Wilson. So I guess, you know, and then they drafted guys like, they draft Dax Hill in the first round to be the next Jesse Bates, but he doesn't really play. Cam Taylor-Britt does play. He was a cornerback. Do you feel like this was their best shot? Or let me rephrase that, the easiest shot that they'll have.
I don't know what the right terminology to use is, but I think you're asking the right question. And the answer to that question is yes. Like, I don't know if best shot, easiest shot, like, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but I think that, I think this is the way to think about it, is if you look at the Chiefs run, it's like, it's clear that we're now in the Chiefs' second window. Not everyone is able to create a second window. Now they're going to have to redo it. Like, there's going to have to enter this phase where it's now time to rethink how they're approaching this. And that is much more difficult than, like, all right, grab a guy here, grab a guy there. All right, we're going to plug this hole, plug that hole. We need a little help here. We need a little help there. And let's go for it. Now it's time to start thinking about the Tyreek Hill trade. It's time to start thinking about moves that they can make. So, like, they can go about it a couple different ways. Is you can go all – try to go all in this next year and try to win and pay everybody and push off big expenditures into the future. Or you can try to, like, start building for your next run. Like, I thought this was going to be the weakest year that the Chiefs had. And I think they overcame a lot and made it deep and all that. But I think that this year or next year will be this year for the Bengals, if that makes sense. Like, the way that the Chiefs are now will be next year for the Bengals, which I guess turned out pretty well for them.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, when you have the quarterback, everything else is easier. So it's going – I think the way to – I think of it is life is going to continuously get harder for them from here on out, but they're still going to be favorites every year because you got the quarterback. And when I say favorites, I mean, oh, hey, Bill.
Cutie.
Barnwell. For the podcast audience, Bill Barnwell just appeared on the TV behind Dominique, looking very dapper today in a suit. So I think it's going to get harder. They're going to have to do all of the things, you know, that we just talked about, frankly, the Chiefs doing in terms of, like, finding value and figuring out where you want to invest. And, you know, you could argue, like, Ja'Marr Chase has the potential to be that the best wide receiver in the NFL in the way that we just talked about Travis Kelce, for example. I think the thing that I'm going to be thinking about a lot is the T. Higgins aspect of it, because it's very hard to pay two wide receivers as at the level that both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins deserve. So they're going to have, I think, big decisions about, you know, with T. Higgins in his last year. Do we, like, say, okay, well, we got him now. Let's, like you said, let's go all in on this year. Let's find a way to maximize our roster now. Or do we start thinking ahead a little bit, maybe even draft a receiver this year? You know, it's going to be a little bit tricky. And then, man, that's a lot of losses on that defense. I think they're probably going to keep Luana Rumo, who interviewed for the Cardinals job, but which certainly helps things. And there's still a lot of talent on that defensive line. But, you know, this was a defense that was really built in a lot of ways through free agency. Last year, we talked about how they hit on all of those free agent signings. They made a lot of really smart choices. And as those guys leave, they're going to be more dependent on young talent to step up and fill those roles.
Yep. I'm getting a COVID test as we speak.
Are you just going to keep doing it on camera? Is it a nose one?
Why not? Yeah, they're going to get up in there.
Okay. While you're getting your tested, I'm going to ask you a question.
No, I had answers for you about that other one, though.
Okay.
Answer. I mean, well, I guess it made me think about Kelce and – oh, no, you go. You go right ahead.
Oh, okay.
Made me think about Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, because, like, they obviously moved on from Tyreek Hill because Tyreek Hill – had to go. But Tyreek Hill receivers are obviously more expensive. So, like, the idea of keeping a receiver and a tight end, like, I think is feasible. But the idea of keeping two top-level receivers, thank you, bye, two top-level receivers is a lot more challenging, a lot more expensive. And I can't imagine – yeah, I don't know what to do if I'm there, honestly. Like, I feel like my choice would be go all in and try to win next year. And then we figure it out after that. And well, not I mean, try can, to.
If you do a long-term deal with Burrow, you can structure it so as to, you know, to have cap space next year.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I guess the point is you're going to have to pay at some point. The big question is, the big question for them is, what are you going to do with all these defensive bodies, and what are you going to do? Like, the major question, what you brought up is Chase and Higgins is, are you going to build around your big three being Chase, Higgins, and Burrow, or are you not? The one thing that I would push back against the idea of keeping all three of them is receiver seems like the most, like, plentiful position
in the draft.
Yeah. And if you can keep just using the capital to draft receivers, a couple.
It just sucks because, so Jonah Williams is 1 year left, by the way, who's their first round left tackle. I mean, they could potentially option him. I guess they probably, though they're going to have to be really judicious about that with Higgins too. They could maybe get another year. He was a first round draft pick, right? Or no, was he second?
Yeah, I think he was first.
Mm. In any case,
I just remember being surprised how in on Chase they were, considering how high they had drafted Higgins.
It's, they just were felled by the injuries on the offensive line. So to go all, to be like, we're going to spend everything on two wide receivers. It's like when you go.
He was 33rd.
Top of the second.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you ever go to a restaurant and you eat too many entrees or appetizers because the appetizers are so good, and by the time the entrees get there, you're full. I feel like that is what it would be like if they just spent all their money on wide receiver. Like, you know, because you're kind of, you're ending up maybe with the same result if the offensive line suffers attrition. Yeah. I don't know. It's really tricky, but it seems like it would be very difficult for them to keep both.
I'll just wait to see what they do, and then I'll decide that that was the wrong thing. And I'll argue that they made the wrong decision. That's the move.
I think I do think that they should draft a wide receiver. Okay. Yeah. The Niners. So Brock Purdy goes out during that game. The game basically from a Niners perspective becomes kind of pointless and sad. And then we immediately find out in an even sadder note that Purdy completely tore his UCL. That man was out there smiling, handing the ball off, pitching it with a completely torn UCL. So shout out to Brock Purdy. That's tricky because it's a complicated injury. It's one where the timeline is unclear. Potentially, depending on whether it's like a full Tommy John style reconstruction or just a repair, he might be back for camp. He might not. So massive uncertainty there. You've got Trey Lance, the number three overall pick they traded multiple first rounders for, who played like, you know, very little football, is coming back from injury before then, off the ankle. It's a terrible injury. And Jimmy Garoppolo is out of the building. Yeah. So
That's what you thought last time.
I think, especially because of the injury thing, it's like they can't do the Jimmy Garoppolo thing again, I think.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If you're the Niners, I think I should also give cap space context. Not a lot of cap space. 35 guys under contract, I saw. Tons of free agents. Mike McGlinchey, notably. Ward, Ebukam, Gibson. I'm missing a couple other guys. Brunskill, but McGlinchey is the one that I think is and oh, of course, Bosa's on his last year, so he's going to get a big deal this year. So knowing that, here are your three options. I'm actually going to do two options. Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, are you starting quarterbacks? And yeah, they have a QB competition. Maybe draft someone or bring in a free agent. Try to convince Tom Brady to sign a team-friendly deal. What would you do?
There's no reason you have to choose. I mean, you can try to get Tom Brady to sign a team-friendly deal and then fall back on those other two if possible, like, or if necessary. I don't know the right answer to this. I think best case scenario is Trey Lance turns into a number three overall draft pick, because this offense with Trey Lance playing well is better than you can imagine with anybody else, including Tom Brady.
Yeah.
At least including the version of Tom Brady that we've most recently seen. The version, and maybe he's a different player under different circumstances, but the most important circumstance that he needs is protection. and they don't have that there either. I don't know that. I mean, Kyle Shanahan obviously can coordinate an offense for someone with Tom Brady's skill set, but I don't know that these receivers are the receivers that Tom Brady wanted. Like, we don't appreciate how perfect that Tampa Bay situation was.
I'm so glad you're saying this, because on one hand, Tom Brady, Kyle Shanahan, that offense, Super Bowl. On the other hand, we've actually never seen Tom Brady. I mean, it's a very different fit. I think it would work because these guys are very, very smart and the skill players are amazing. But, like, you know, Tom Brady would be ceding a lot of control at the line of scrimmage. I mean, one of those guys would have to really kind of change things up if this were to happen.
That's an interesting point to bring up, because what that makes me think is do the value that both of them bring to the team overlap too much? Ooh. You know what I mean? So, like, the best case scenario for Kyle Shanahan and his ability to, like, scheme things is, like, you want somebody who's a super athlete who can throw the ball accurately, and, like, that's it, because he will cover up. His value is, like, making the reads easier, taking the pressure off you with the running game, finding ways to accentuate your strengths. I feel like that's the same thing that Tom Brady brings to the table, is, like, the pre-snap and the offensive design and structure. Like, you want – I would love for nothing more than for Kyle Shanahan to have a big, fancy, brand-new toy with all the bells and whistles. That ain't Tom Brady. Tom Brady is, like, a different type of guy. And I don't know.
No, that's such an interesting point about their skill sets being, like, sort of duplicative. It's weird, right? Like,
and it's also, like, the credibility. I think that's something else that Tom Brady brings. He, like, brings this credibility and automatic confidence that we're a competitor. These are things that he brings to places that Kyle Shanahan already got. You know, like, there's nobody – players already want to play for Kyle Shanahan, and they already know that they're automatically going to be competitive if Kyle Shanahan is there. I don't think Deebo Samuel is out here thinking, like, oh, man, if Tom Brady gets here, now watch my numbers. No.
So would you consider then hoping that Lance gets healthy and improves and bringing in more like a Jacoby Brissett type, like a kind of middle-of-the-pack free agent, you know, to give them some continuity and competition, right. And I guess solidity. Yeah. But then hope, you know, really hope that either Purdy or Lance is the guy.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like you have to take a shot at Tom Brady.
After
all that, it's like, I mean, I don't know.
I would like to see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'm thinking if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'd rather go the Trey Lance route. As stupid as that sounds, I'd rather go the Trey Lance route than the Tom Brady route, because I have supreme confidence in my ability. Well, and, yeah.
Financially, it would certainly make it easier for them to keep more of those players. So there's that as well, depending on what Tom Brady would be willing to do, which is the other great unknown in all of this. Man, there's like no good answers here. There's no perfect answers. There's a lot of complexity and a lot of unknowns. The unknown of Lance's injury and whether he can, you know, develop. The unknown of Purdy's injury, which is super serious. The unknown of what Tom Brady wants, what he requires financially. But I'll say this. I got to think Kyle Shanahan standing on the sideline, watching Christian McCaffrey go out there as his quarterback. Some part of his brain had to have been thinking, just bring me Tom Brady. I can't do this again.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think he might be quarterback cursed. I think it might even be strong enough to take down the great Tom Brady. He can't freaking get it right at the quarterback spot.
It really, it is like God said, all right,
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to make you the greatest offensive play caller in modern NFL history. I'm going to give you some of the coolest, most interesting skill players this world has ever seen. You are going to roll out an offense that's basically impossible to stop. And Kyle's like, yeah, this is all good. This is all good. There's just one thing. I'm never going to give you a good quarterback.
Not once.
It's so
messed up. It is. I don't know. I feel like it's an old TikTok trend now, but they used to do this thing where God would like pour water into like different areas that represented like making a person. And it's like, hey.
Oh, like a little bit of this. A little bit of that.
Like he definitely just gave a little drop of quarterback, just a little teaspoon of quarterback, and just drenched everything else.
That's so brutal. All right. Well, Niners, you have some interesting choices to make. Very curious to see how that plays out. All right, Dominique, thanks for joining me, as always. This is fun. Check out the Dominique Foxworth Show wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out next week. We will actually preview the Super Bowl.